We're at Angel Fire Resort, and we've had all kinds of weather today. And Norio Hayakawa, you've been, you're actually around Albuquerque.
That's correct.
But you've traveled a lot of places. And you know New Mexico, like the back of your hand or the front of your hand, whichever.
That's correct.
And we've talked to you before about Dulce, and we may get into that. But first of all, I'd like to say welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Jerry, for this opportunity.
And it's a pleasure to meet you in person. We've talked on the phone.
Yes.
But this is the first time I've had a chance to talk to you in person, and I appreciate that. You talked about Area 51 today, and you were up there before almost anybody. How did you find out about that place?
Well, actually, I found out about Area 51 back in 1988 when I saw a two-hour live program called UFO Live Cover-Up.
Cover-Up.
Okay. Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Fox TV. And anyway, in that two-hour program, Area 51 was mentioned for only a few seconds in that program. So that caught my attention. And at the same time, I got to know a gentleman by the name of Tal Levesque, or Jason Bishop. He gave me some information about Area 51 as well as Dulce. And at the same time, his friend John Lear sent me his hypothesis on Area 51 and also Dulce. So back in 1988, I was familiar with the existence of a secret base called Area 51 in Nevada, as well as the alleged existence of an underground base in Dulce, New Mexico. And also at the same time, you know, coincidentally, I received a packet from William Moore. You know, in that packet, there was a Russian satellite photo of Groom Lake, and he described Area 51 as a secret base. You know, by 1989, I was more or less familiar with the Area 51, and in 1989, actually, I listened to a radio program.
I bet you it was Billy Goodman.
That's right, Billy Goodman.
Billy Goodman, right.
Yes.
Well, see, I was on the same station with Billy.
All right.
KVEG.
Yes, KVEG, and I was listening, and there every night was this guest named Bob Lazar, and that's
how you got hooked. Yeah,
that's right.
And did you go up there on the bus tour?
That's right. I went to bus tours, and there were a lot of things going.
Bus and
yes.
You guys went up there.
Yeah, that's right. Billy Goodman took a lot of people with his bus and to the Highway 375, to the black mailbox location, and all, of course, to the Rachel Bar and Grill. At that time, it was known as Rachel's Bar and Grill.
Yeah, right. Before they named it Little A&M.
That's right. And, you know, that's the start of my research into Area 51. And I even took a television crew from Japan to that location and even interviewed Bob Lazar at his home.
So, what do you make of Bob Lazar?
Well, he's definitely a brilliant guy, a genius in many fields, and but I still don't know the real
Bob Lazar.
Yeah, Bob Lazar. He still does business with his United Nuclear Company, which
he's here in New Mexico, right?
Yes, he was in Albuquerque, you know, back of the Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque, but last year he moved his thing to Michigan.
And, so he keeps moving around.
Well, I have no idea, but the amazing thing is that he seemed to continue to do, you know, occasional work for various subcontractors, you know, defense-related subcontractors. So he's definitely a knowledgeable person in many ways. So who knows? He may be having an indirect connection still with certain, you know, governmental projects.
Well, tell me and the audience a little bit about, first of all, your first impressions of Area 51 and how you feel about it today.
Yes. Area 51 is an active base research facility. It is expanding even today. Just 2 years ago, they began to build a hangar, which is about three or four times the size of the so-called H-18 in Groom Lake. That was the largest hangar, but 2 years ago they started construction of a hangar that is just amazing in size.
Why do you think they want such big hangars?
Well, this is the reason why we feel that there are new projects, possibly for, you know, a new type of, possibly a stealth type of blimp technology. It can be considered, and maybe other types of, who knows what, reconnaissance planes or whatever, but... we don't know for sure. There is a new, brand new tower that's built at the end of the tarmac, which is very, very strange looking. And all these new buildings can be seen in a website called dreamlandresort.com. And I'm one of the original, supporting member of that website. And the latest information about the facility itself can be, obtained through that website.
What about the extraterrestrial angle?
Well, the extraterrestrial angle is really something that I am not into, or I don't have knowledge about, because my main interest in this field of ufology is the how belief systems can be manipulated in certain ways by governmental agencies, and this goes the same goes for conspiracy theories. The beliefs in conspiracy theories are something that can be manipulated by whoever wants to manipulate the belief system
right,
of a segment
of the
population.
A conspiracy theory might be a conspiracy theory to get you to believe it.
That's correct. That's exactly my position in this strange world of ufology. And, I believe that Bill Cooper was right. I knew Bill Cooper back in, 1989, and I even helped him organize.
Yeah, I guess you were hanging out with Billy Goodman and going up there on the bus.
That's right, that's right. In fact, Bill Cooper was very much into ufology in the beginning, but he abandoned his ufological association, and he even coined the term ufology to describe ufology, and he departed completely from ufology. And but anyway, he went into the militia movement, and unfortunately, he died in a shootout. And I attended his funeral in Arizona, and he did have a lot of impact among a segment of the a population, who were.
Well, I mean, when you go to somebody's funeral, you can really tell a little bit about their life and their secrets.
That's true. That's true.
As you know.
Yes. But, personally, I've been into ufology for more than 45 years. I started back in 1963. My interest, I used to get newsletters from NICAP and from APRO in Arizona. Uh-huh. And, I have never associated myself with groups like MUFON. And so I consider myself a sort of unorthodox or renegade type ufologist. But more than that, I call myself an activist because, I think that... this entire field is full of misinformation and also disinformation, and how certain groups use these misinformation to bring out their own agenda. And in fact, the disinformation tactic was invented by German SS intelligence officers. That's right. In 1945, mm-hmm. Albuquerque was the location of the transfer of many German engineers and scientists, as well as intelligence officers from SS. They landed in Albuquerque. They were stationed in Kirtland Army Air Base at that time, and then they spread to, White Sands and Los Alamos. So this information...
Yeah, I understand they bought a lot of property down through there, too.
Yes, that's right. This information is a very effective tool for any group, governmental agencies. Overall, I cannot say that in this world there are... in other words, I cannot deny the existence of paranormal activity in this world, because not everything that we can see is all to mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that we cannot see that exist. After more than 45 years of research and investigation into UFO phenomena, I can say that, the answer is it's just unsolvable so far. And this is the reason why researchers such as John A. Keel and researchers such as Dr. Jack Vallée a long time ago abandoned their ET hypothesis around the late 70s. And myself also, I used to be a proponent of the extraterrestrial hypothesis of the origins of UFOs, but I abandoned that position. And
so what do you think? It's
I believe it's some kind of unseen manipulative force, intelligent force that is shaping our belief system for possible future scenarios. And
what would one of those possible future scenarios be?
Well, it's hard for me to describe. I know that 1947 is the year in which all these conditioning system began, with the so-called, I think it's staging of crash of flying saucers. To me, any advanced technology that's from outer space should have no reason for their device to crash land, on Earth. And so my belief is that they purposely staged that type of a crash, maybe physically or
purposely stage it. This group of paranormal.
That's right. Paranormal entities could have staged both physically and non-physically, if there's such a thing. But that's my belief that. And then the government is positioned, I'm not sure. The government also could have staged things, but I'm more and more beginning to believe that these entities purposely staged those incidents to bring up an agenda such as the belief systems in the extraterrestrial contact.
And why would they want to do that, I wonder?
Well, I think is to change our perception of things in this world. And ufology and beliefs in extraterrestrial entities are still considered to be part of a pseudoscience by the mainstream, despite the fact that we have more than 60 years of history of modern day UFO era. The mainstream still considers UFOs and beliefs in UFOs as part of pseudoscience. And you know, we have not produced any definitive evidences. The only photographic evidence that I have seen that was convincing was the 1957 photo taken by the Brazilian Navy. But other than that, most of the photographs and video films of the so-called UFOs are always hazy or not defined well. And, let's face the fact that we have 60 years of the research and it hasn't gone nowhere. And we're back at the same spot, wondering what these UFOs are and what their purposes are. But that doesn't mean that we should give up, the search and study and research of this strange phenomena. I mean, this world itself is strange, so we need to continue,
Do you think then the agenda is at Area 51, just secret projects?
Well, the main agenda, I believe, is secret projects, black projects. Millions of dollars are being used over there, and
in Dulce, do you think it's more connected to Native American legends, or?
You brought a good point. As you know, Dulce is right in the reservation,
yeah.
And there's a lot of authority of the Native Hickory Apache Nation. They control that town, and also they there is a strong cultural and spiritual beliefs, and this is the reason why I believe the U.S. government possibly could have used that area to conduct a certain type of experiments.
You're talking about experiments on human beings?
Well, experiments are basically, I believe, with cattle in 1975.
So that's the reason the cattle mutilation stories are going around?
I believe so. From 1975, especially to 1985, hundreds and hundreds of cattle mutilation took place. And what's interesting is that many ranchers over there claim that they found gas masks near the cattle mutilation sites. One rancher in particular, Edmund Gomez, testified that he even had seen what appeared to be markings on certain cows and prior to their mutilations, and it seemed like they were tracking particular cows in his ranch. And indeed, a few days later, those particular cows were mutilated. And, interesting thing is that during 1975 to 1985, I think that research on bovine diseases were taking place in those areas. But the question is, why can't the government use their own cows in a laboratory instead of doing things openly on our
rustling cattle?
Yeah, that's right. But I think the secondary purpose is possibly to create the impression that these were somehow related to extraterrestrial activity.
So, in other words, you think there's a part of our government that's promulgating the UFO lore or legends?
That's correct. That's my belief. That's has always been my belief. In fact, I talked to a gentleman by the name of Serge Monast, who was a Canadian journalist. And in 1993, I exchanged some, information with him, and that's when I found out that he was bringing out this Project Blue Beam theory, and the theory is that NASA has a special program that will be able to duplicate or stage fake scenario by use of hologramic systems and mind control systems to make anything look real. And I personally think that maybe a minor scale type of a blue beam project may have been conducted in Dulce during the days of cattle mutilations.
Are you thinking about having another conference here?
I would like to have another conference, but I'm still debating that because, you know, this 1990 March Dulce conference was very... it was explosive in so many ways. It was the first time ever to have that conference right in the middle of Dulce. And, you know, a lot of Native Americans spoke up and, you know, testified that they witnessed a lot of strange things. And so I was quite impressed. And at this moment, I don't know where this will all lead into. So I'm debating as to whether to have another one or not. In fact, the former Director of Public Safety, Hoyt Velarde, even suggested that if we have a conference next year...
Now, that's the guy that arrested you.
That's right. That was 1990. Yeah. He arrested us, but, you know, he retired.
He's your buddy now.
He retired. And, in fact, he's very, you know, cooperative, and he himself admitted that he continues... his research into Bigfoot sightings, and he even continues to look for the underground base. But you know, I don't know. There's something strange about the entire town of Dulce. There seems to be a friction within the Hikari Apache tribe.
Some pretty nice buildings here.
Oh yes, despite the smallness of that town, there are many interesting-looking modern buildings there, and you know, school buildings, modern medical facilities, a new high school. But you hardly see any students in these schools, and you know, that's another mystery to me. A town so small, you know, I mean, 2,600 people, and you see all these new modern buildings, and where do they get these money from? And you know, it's a very fascinating place. Yeah, you know, in fact, the Hoyt Velarde said maybe we may be able to use the conference hall of the police department if we want to have a next cattle...
That's quite a switch from you being arrested with a camera crew there sometime
yes,
back. Now, you're at the police station having a conference.
That's right. I think in 1990 they were still very apprehensive about outsiders coming in and talking about, you know, these things. But he retired, and, you know, it seems like there is a change. And I think the tribal council is also getting more lenient. But, you know, even within the Hikari Apache Nation, there seem to be some friction. There are those within the Hikari Apache Nation that want to come out and talk more about it, and then the other half may say that you know, they don't want this to go out.
Yeah.
And so we don't really know. That's the bottom of this whole thing about Dulce. It's not like Area 51 where you can see the buildings and you know, everything, but
yeah.
Dulce, you can't even see any you know, any sign of physical location.
On a different subject, Norio, I hear you do country music impressions.
That's correct. Jerry. Yes, I came to Albuquerque in 1965, and I fell in love with country western music as well as New Mexico's ranchera
style. Where were you before 65?
Well, I was born and raised in Yokohama, Japan, and
okay.
You know, I was interested in the Lonnie Zamora's strange case of Socorro in 1964, and that was one of the reasons I came to.
You were still a big E.T. believer.
Definitely, and also the another reason for coming to New Mexico.
Now, the Japanese government didn't send you over here?
No. And yeah. You know, the other reason was I was interested in the Spanish language. I eventually became a Spanish high school Spanish teacher, taught in Arizona and so on, because New Mexico is a unique place. They still speak a very unique type of Spanish that is related to 16th century Spanish. And you can hear these kind of Spanish idiomatic expressions in like in northern New Mexico, especially. So it's a unique place. And I retired just last year. My wife and I decided to move to New Mexico because there's something about the state of New Mexico that is...
Well, it's a land of enchantment.
It is indeed a land of enchantment, literally. I'm talking about literally.
Right. Okay, I can't let you go without doing some country western song here.
Well, actually, sorry, but I didn't bring my thing. You know, I was going to bring my whole one-man band orchestra, but, you know, that's too much to bring.
You have a recording of that or something?
Yes.
Okay, Noriel, through the magic of radio, we have definitely made arrangements to play a song as our bumper. In fact, we're going to play the whole thing. Thanks very much for being with us, Norio Hayakawa and his one-man band. This is a great country song, Norio. Thanks for coming by.
If you ever change your mind about leaving me behind, oh, bring it to me, bring your sweet love, bring it on home to me, yeah, yeah. I know why I laugh when you laugh. Now I know I only hurt myself. To me, bring your sweet love in, bring it on home to me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'll give you jewelry and money too. That ain't all I'm gonna do for you. Baby, bring it to me. Bring your sweet love in. Bring it on home to me. Yeah, yeah. You know I try to treat you right, but you stayed out, yes, you stayed out late at night. I'll forgive you, bring it to me.
That was Norio Hayakawa, UFO researcher and country music singer. And that ends it from Angel Fire, Roberta Scott, Shanina Johnson, Lori Capace, all our producers. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thanks, everyone, at the hotel. We've had a great time. More shows coming up from the Community Center at Angel Fire. Good night.